All right. Welcome back. Hour number three on this Friday, end of another week. It's been a long week. Lots of things going on. And we'll try and rest over the weekend, as I hope all of you will do too. Father Paul Kramer is standing by in Ireland now. We get to spend time with him a couple of times a month. And it is a very, very phenomenal thing to watch happen. That being the overthrow of the Roman Catholic faith, the Church. It has been overthrown. And Pope, the fake Pope now, Bergoglio, is leading the way. When he passes, and it may happen any time, I'm watching very carefully, I'm sure Father Kramer is watching 10 times more so than I, about who's going to pick up the ball and run with it. This is a big operation underway now. It's a global operation. Now, there's a very interesting story we're going to get into first here. Welcome back, Father Kramer. How goes it over there?
Oh, it's going well for me, and at least we don't have the windstorms anymore. We have good, calm weather tonight.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Okay. Now, I've gotten a number of people who have written in and asked about this public relations thing they're going to do with Pope Francis. Bergoglio is going to open these holy doors during Christmas liturgies. What's this all about? And have these doors really, they're supposedly in an underground chamber, but they're not underground, apparently. Anyway, Father Kramer is going to try and bring this into focus for us now. Go ahead.
When there's a holy year, the jubilee years and things like that, at the main entrance of the usually the major basilicas, but especially St. Peter's, they have the holy door there, right, where the Pope, that will be closed since the last holy year, and the Pope will open it, and with the ceremony, he opens it, and there will be indulgences and graces that are to be granted when people will pray and go through those doors entering the church to for their pious purpose of worshiping God in according to the faith of Jesus Christ in the Catholic Church. Now, Bergoglio's making a big show of opening multiple doors like this. I think this is a smokescreen. He wants to look like a pope.
Yeah, I get it.
Whereas, in fact, what's happening in the church, and you have some disinformation, some articles trying to make something look very sinister about what is something very common for the church.
They're suggesting it's a very dark side. And here, let me just read this real quickly. Pope Francis and the Vatican will open 5 spiritual portals during Christmas Eve. They are part of the Roman Catholic Church rituals that date back to 1300. The Jubilee Year rituals, which involve opening holy doors, occur every 25 years. So this is just another little PR hustle, is what it is. Been doing this for a long time.
And some of the articles are really creating smoke screens too, because they're trying to make something very ordinary look sinister, and that really deflects attention away from what is really very sinister happening under the rulership of this counterfeit pope. Because we see paganism now creeping into the liturgy, into the new rites of mass that are, if we can call them mass, I think some of these new rites will not even constitute a proper mass at all. Mm-hmm. The way things are going, and I think this is in the third secret of Fatima, warning that all this reform in the church is leading to the abolition of the mass.
And the abolition of the mass, the entire, has Bergoglio or any of his sycophants talked about this as a goal that they want to achieve? Is that being talked about openly, the abolition of the mass?
They won't talk about it openly. because if they did, that would stir up the
church
would turn against them, and they would understand that these people are nothing but a gang of imposters. They've been doing this for a long time. This predates Bergoglio. They came to the surface just after Vatican II. It became clear what they were intending to do. And that's the third secret of Fatima, that they're going to change the Mass in order to eventually abolish the Mass. And it's not just the Mass. It is faith as such that they intend to abolish. And that's rather clear from the document that came, that would be Bergoglio's own document. Not after this last session of the synod, but the previous one. And I mentioned this in a previous program, when Bergoglio issued a document called Ad Theologiam Promovendum, which is promoting theology. And it's not promoting theology, because theology is based on faith. It is for destroying faith. It will destroy theology. It's going to take theology away from its proper foundation, which is the revealed truths of faith, and replace that with science. Not true science either, but the phony science that dates back to the Enlightenment philosophers, when they attacked faith by trying to replace it with reason.
Well, interesting. That's a hell of a big replacement.
Human reason is created by God, and insofar as the human mind was created in order to understand, to grasp the truth and understand it, it's a reflection of the divine. It's made in the image of God. According to the image of God, God, who is the supreme, absolute, infinite, and eternal truth, has created man according to his image and likeness. And so human beings have that power, that spiritual capacity to understand with the faculty of the intellect, like the divine mind, as a reflection of the divine mind. And that's what human reason is. But because we are creatures, we have a limited power of our mind. The divine mysteries are pertain to the very infinite being of God, being infinite and eternally perfect. It is entirely beyond the capacity of a created, finite little mind of a human being. Mm-hmm. And that's why the mysteries of faith are just beyond the capacity of the human mind to grasp them. Saint Augustine was trying to understand the mystery of the Trinity, that there are three persons and one God, and he pondered and tried to understand it and get a better understanding of it, and there was a supernatural manifestation that took place. A child came up to him, and he was, I think, using a spoon or a cup or something like that, trying to fill get ocean the seawater and put it into the hole. And he said, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm going to empty the entire sea into this little hole." And that's when Augustine understood that this was not a natural occurrence that took place to him. That I don't know if it was an angel or a saint that appeared to him that did that, but that was that was the message he got from God, that you can't take the infinite expanse of divine being and contain it in a human mind.
Right.
So
okay. Let me.
The fraud of science is to say that if it can't be proven by science, then it's superstition,
mythology, which is a big shortcoming in science, as far as I'm concerned. That's not how it works. There's much more going on here. This door opening...
It's not science.
No, it's not. This door opening, live streaming, televised worldwide, what do they think they're going to gain by doing this? It looks like just a big stunt to me, because it's not unusual. Let me give you an example. This is a little short 3-minute video, and it's Pope to perform sacred ritual that's never been done before. That's the lead on it. Let me play just a little of this. Take a listen.
Pope Francis is set to break centuries of Catholic tradition by opening 5 holy doors, including an unprecedented door at a prison, marking a groundbreaking moment in the Church's 2,000-year history. The Vatican will launch its Jubilee Year of Hope on Christmas Eve, 24 December, with the first holy door opening at St. Peter's Basilica. This extraordinary event represents a powerful symbolic journey of spiritual renewal. According to the papal announcement, Pope Francis will ceremonially open holy doors at 4 major basilicas and 1 prison, signaling a radical approach to expressing divine mercy and hope. The 5 locations will include St. Peter's Basilica, the Archbasilica of St. John Lateran, the Basilica of St. Mary Major, the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls, and Rebibbia Prison in Rome. This unprecedented move represents the first time in Catholic history that a holy door will be opened within a prison facility, symbolizing a profound message of hope and redemption for marginalized communities. The Jubilee tradition, dating back to 1300, typically occurs every 25 years and represents opportunities for forgiveness and spiritual transformation.
Okay, I'll pause it there. That's halfway through. Any comments on that, Father Kramer?
Well, this is a Bergoglian stunt because with all the appearance of trying to gain grace and divine mercy, this man is made it clear in that document I was referring to that they intend to destroy faith entirely. They will destroy faith. They will destroy the Catholic religion. Destroy the Catholic faith is what they intend to do. They can't destroy it because the faith is of God, and as Jesus Christ said, the gates of hell cannot prevail against it. The gates of hell cannot prevail against Christ's Church because it's a divine institution. But they will attempt to do so. This is the iniquitous plan that goes back to the to the Enlightenment. Voltaire, who said, I'm tired of hearing that 12 men founded Christianity. I'm going to prove that one man can destroy it. And that was himself. Well, it hasn't happened and it won't happen. And but Bergoglio is doing his worst to annihilate the faith that we receive from the apostles and replace it with something entirely bogus based on this this arrogant false science, which ultimately itself amounts to a superstition. When I hear scientists talk about some of the miracles that the great saints have worked, they always insist that there must be a scientific explanation for everything. And I will point out, for example, this was a miracle worked by a great saint of the 20th century, Padre Pio of Pietrelcina, the Capuchin friar, canonized by Pope John Paul II. And when I went to Rome in 1972, I heard about there was a 7-year-old girl. I think she was 34 years old at the time that I was in Rome that year. So count back 34 years when she was born. So it was 7 years after that. She was 7 years old. She was totally blind. She was born blind. She had a birth defect, which was she had no pupils in her eyes.
Well, that's pretty strange.
So she was totally blind. If you have no pupils in your eyes, the light can't get you. So you're totally blind. So Padre Pio worked a miracle, restored her sight, restored. She got her sight that she was blind from birth, but she got perfect vision.
And how old was she at the time this miracle happened, about?
She was seven years old when the miracle happened. In 1972, I think, 72, 73, she was like 34 years old, very much alive. But she still had no pupils in her eyes. She went,
but she could see.
She'd gone through her entire life with perfectly good vision ever since the miracle, and still has no pupils in her eyes. I don't know if she's alive now. She'd be over 80 years old now. But very well known. I did know her name at one point, but I've forgotten. It's too long ago. Boy, that's like 50 years ago that I heard her name.
If you ever, Father Kramer, if you ever run across anybody who knows of this lady, and if she is still alive, and you can get any contact information, I'll write to her and invite her to come on the program. She might want to talk. Who knows? And there's certainly a lot of people in their 80s who are very verbally, they're fine. They talk all the time. Anyhow, it's just a thought. That would be a great guest to have on.
She probably doesn't speak English, though.
Oh, there's a problem. Okay. All right.
But scientists, when you confront scientists with a miracle like this, then they will resort to the most outlandish explanations to say they don't talk about mysterious powers in the universe that we don't understand, we don't know about. And I'm thinking, and these are the people who speak against superstition. And look at this. This is superstition. When they resort to unknown powers. Is this science? No, this isn't science. This is just an abject refusal, rejection of any belief in any supernatural power. That God is superior to the universe. God is the creator of the universe. Of course, he's superior to the universe. He has power over the universe. God is the creator of the laws of nature. He can suspend the laws of nature and work miracles. But the scientists, not all scientists, but many scientists simply refuse to accept that as a possibility. God is the creator of
science. Science is often drowning in its own arrogance. There are some wonderful scientists out there, but there are a lot who are on enormous ego trips, as most of you know. Go ahead.
Scientists are like the fish in the fishbowl. And they think that no superior power can touch anything inside
That's
their
right.
fishbowl. Whereas the human beings who feed the fish interact over that fishbowl every day. And our created universe is that fishbowl. And they're saying that God, who created the whole thing, has no power over it. And this is just nonsense. There is no conflict between true science and faith. Because scientific truth and divine truth revealed in divine revelation, what we believe by faith, are truth from God, and truth cannot contradict the truth. Simple as that.
Got it. All right. By the way, this 3-minute video or thereabout is obvious what its agenda is when you look at the whole thing. See if I can find this. Oh, near the end it says, Pope Francis continues his mission of challenging traditional boundaries and demonstrating the Catholic Church's commitment to compassion. You don't have to work too hard to read between the lines of that one. Jeez. Just pushing it right out there in people's faces.
What he's pushing is not compassion.
No. 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 He's talking about homosexual marriages and all kinds of things like that. That's what the message is here.
Yes. It's not compassion.
Challenging traditional boundaries. Remember, that's the key. Challenging traditional boundaries. All right.
There's nothing compassionate about abolishing moral standards. That's creating anarchy. Anarchy is not compassionate. Anarchy is what we find in hell. Total lack of order. And that's what Bergoglio is going to create, a total lack of order. The Antichrist in sacred scripture in 2 Thessalonians, the Apostle Paul refers to him as the man of lawlessness. And by abolishing the moral law, Bergoglio is ushering in the reign of that man of lawlessness. That's what he's doing.
Got it. Well, that was a whopper, that little sentence I read. Traditional values, pushing against traditional values, makes the church really lead the way from the darkness into the light. Yes, uh-huh, right. Well, this guy won't be missed at all. Unfortunately, I have a hunch. You know who my hunch is pointing at for his successor. We'll see. Who is, this is a, maybe a little bit of an exotic approach, but who is giving Bergoglio his marching orders on a day-to-day basis or a week-to-week basis? Who's laying out the course that he is expected to follow in this takedown?
Well, it won't be on a day-to-day basis. He won't be receiving orders day-to-day, but the agenda, of course, is from Freemasonry. The agenda he follows is from Freemasonry. The general directives he receives is from Freemasonry.
We don't want to exclude Zionism from that either, friends. I'm speaking for myself, but it's part of the same power matrix. So you can't have one without the other. My take.
At the moment, that's the case, yes. That will only change when that day finally arrives, when the Jewish people will see that this Zionist leadership has been leading them into the hands of their own enemies. And you look at sacred scripture. You see the story of Esther, and there was the idea that they're going to basically exterminate Jews, and you find that this. There has been some mystery in what has happened to the Jewish people over the millennia. Jesus Christ, of course, when he was just before he was crucified, Pontius Pilate said to the chief priests and the rabble, the rabble that they were rousing up against Christ. And he said, "Do you want me to crucify your king?" And they said, "We have no king but Caesar." And they said, "Crucify him, crucify him." And
what Father Kramer, hold that thought. What Father Kramer is saying here, the Jews in Judea were, they had all come together, basically, and there were enormous mobs yelling and screaming and demanding Christ be put to death. No joke. And Pilate had only two or three centurions and about 100 soldiers, some of which were actually Jews. And they could have been easily overthrown and lost the entire Roman outpost in Judea had he not gone ahead with that. That's the odds he was facing, and one of the reasons, allegedly, that the crucifixion was allowed to go on. If he had hundreds of soldiers, he probably would not have. But he was facing literally a totalitarian overthrow of the Roman government in Judea. It is a terrible thing. But these people were screaming and yelling from what I've read, and you've read far more than I, and demanding that Christ be put to death. Pilate didn't want to do it. Am I right?
That's right. He didn't want to do it. That's why he washed his hands and said, and they said, his blood be upon us and upon our children.
Right.
And organized Jewry screamed about that line so that it was not put into the Passion of the Christ of Mel Gibson, because it would stir up that kind of a reaction. But this is the problem that for 2,000 years, Jesus Christ was the one foretold who would be the Messianic King. The kingdom of Christ is the King of the Jews, but they reject. They have been left out of. They have opted out of the kingdom that God had prepared for them. They've mm-hmm. opted out of that kingdom, so they wonder why they have suffered so much during the last 2,000 years. Well, they opted out of the kingdom that God prepared for them, and the day will come. The day will come when they will finally grasp this. Someone's going to come along, and of course, we know that's the man of lawlessness, the Antichrist. He's going to make Hitler look like a choir boy, and they are going to face extinction. As much as you hear the Jewish people say, never again, never again, never again, look in sacred scripture. It will happen again, and it's going to be far worse. And it will only be their conversion to Jesus Christ that will save them. Then the hand of God will strike their enemies only when they acknowledge the one, their king, who their own ancestors had crucified.
Mm-hmm.
They said, we have no king but Caesar. His blood be upon us and upon our children.
Right.
And until they reverse that position and profess Christ, Jesus Christ the Lord, to be their king, they will remain in this blindness, and the curse of Moses is upon them, as the prophet Daniel himself said. The curse of Moses is upon us; it remains upon right. them until they embrace the one, until they opt back into the kingdom that God prepared for them, which is to submit to the kingship of Jesus Christ.
What is your take on the over here in the U.S.? We have estimates range, but give or take, it's estimated to be about 45 million, that being the number of Christian Zionists in the U.S. What are your thoughts on Christian Zionists, if you have any?
It's a real contradiction to speak of Christian Zionists, because Christianity and Zionism are incompatible with each other.
It's always been the way I saw it, but these people are—they're true believers that the chosen are the chosen, and they're going to go along with it. And there's a lot of people over here, 45 billion, and they vote, and they have political power. And I'm not sure if the same is over in your country. Go ahead.
There are not too many points on which both Pope Saint Pius X and that Theodor Herzl would agree. But they would agree on that one point.
Uh-huh.
This is one point, that Christianity and Zionism are incompatible. They would both agree with that.
Well, Herzl was quite a hustler, and from what I understand, what I've read. Anyhow, it's just an issue I wanted to raise real quickly and see what you had to say about it. I think you've said it perfectly. These people over here... Many believe them to be deluded, and almost in a dangerous sense, because they go right along with their controllers and masters, and we know who runs the former United States of America. It's not American patriots. And you've got 45 million Christian Zionists who are going to go along with it because they believe these people are actually perfect and have suffered. And it's the victim thing. So you don't have it over there. That's good. We have a problem here.
Well, at least like the Irish government has put, there's an order that if Netanyahu would arrive in Ireland, he would be arrested and sent to the court, international court in Hague. We're not under the, here in Ireland, at least we're not quite under that kind of power as the some of the Israeli politicians are crowing about how they control the United States.
Well, they do. There was a gentleman here who was a friend of mine. He was a guest on the program many, many times. He's gone now. His name was Reverend Ted Pike. You may or may not have heard of him. He was very well spoken and made many yes. media appearances. You remember Ted Pike? Oh, good.
Yes, I quoted him in one of my books.
Very good. Yeah, Ted was a friend of mine, and as I said, we talked many, many times off the air. There's a little video that someone sent me, and I'd like to play it. It's just 2 minutes, 2:30, I think. He and his wife were standing, I believe, in front of the Capitol steps in Washington, D.C., and he's warning about the Zionists. This is 1987, and he was spot on. Let me play this. It's very short, but it's. I like to honor Ted because he was a very devout and devoted truth teller. Oop, hold on. I've got to go to a different screen to pull this up. You quoted him in one of your books. That's very interesting.
The Mystery of Iniquity is the book that I quoted him in.
Very good. All right, here it is.
I talk about Zionism in the book.
Good.
Hello, I'm Ted Pike, and this is my wife, Alin. Today, a foreign government, Israel, operates the most powerful lobby in Congress. This is AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Through control of Congress, Israel demands and gets nearly $5 billion annually. No elected official dares criticize Israel for fear the Jewish lobby will accuse him of anti-Semitism, the kiss of death for any politician. The president also knows what Israel wants, Israel gets. To act otherwise is political suicide. The mass media, founded and controlled primarily by Jews, manipulates the spigot of information out of which Heartland America drinks. The message of this contaminated source is, if you criticize Israel, you are anti-Semitic. Be safe, keep your head down, or you are fair game for being knocked off by the Zionist shooting gallery.
As a result, our president and elected officials are slaves to political correctness when it comes to Jews and Israel. They cannot seriously criticize Israel, especially as the source of Mideast strife and terrorism. They cannot suggest an end of aid to Israel. They cannot even protest Zionist control of Congress.
Now, Father Kramer, over here, we have a bill that passed the House overwhelmingly. It's called the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. I believe that's the formal title of it. And it will make critics of international Zionism, national Zionism, of Jewish policies coming out of Israel, etc., any criticism of Jews and Zionism will be against the law, the penalties of which have yet to be established, but there are some people now calling for anyone convicted of doing that, in other words, exercising their rights to the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America, freedom of speech. They want these people deported from the United States if they criticize Israel. This law is very big news, and I'm very concerned about it. It may be the end of the First Amendment here. So anyhow, that was Ted Pike and his wife, Alin, on that video. And bravo, Ted. You were one of the first to stand up in the media and tell it straight. Go ahead, Father Kramer.
Yeah, I was watching a presentation about, I forgot which state it was in, but they were going to build a monument to honor the victims and the heroic men who suffered and resisted and fought for their lives and the attack on the USS Liberty.
Oh yes, that was Candace Owens had Phil Turney on there. We've had Phil on the program here as well. He is an 80-year-old survivor of the Liberty, and Americans should need nothing more than knowledge and awareness of Israel's attack on the Liberty and the death of 37 U.S. sailors, wounding of many others. It's horrible, but it's been pretty well suppressed, so it's good that she was able to bring that forward.
There was the plan to build a monument to honor the Liberty and,
yes.
and the sailors
and the crew
and
yes.
The Jewish organizations were screaming that that's anti-Semitic.
Oh yes, no, this is nothing less than pure evil. That kind of thinking, that kind of talking, it's sick, it's just sick.
The Israeli Air Force attacked an American ship in international waters, unprovoked attack, knowingly attacked an American naval vessel, and to mention it is called anti-Semitism. To bring out this fact, to publicize the fact, they call that anti-Semitism.
It's pretty crazy. Well, if we want to go along that pathway, I'll be certainly happy to stand up and mention 9/11. That's another Zionist Israeli deeply involved with the Mossad, the CIA. So these people have been involved in a lot of things that are just beyond most people's ability to imagine. It's that crazy. Why would Israel do that? We've supported Israel since 1948. Well, they did it. Anyhow. So that's the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. It, I believe, is pending. I'm not sure where it is pending now. It's beyond the House. It may be in the Senate. Anyway, this is bad. We have to protect our First Amendment. We have to oppose that bill fully and completely.
How do
it's
they
bad.
Intend to deport the
I don't know the answer. It was someone, I believe a representative, House representative, a woman, claims that everyone who is involved with breaking this law, once it's signed, should be deported. That's what she said. No where's and how's and all that. No evidence of a plan, but just calling that these people need to be thrown out of America for exercising their First Amendment rights.
You would have to strip them of their citizenship in order to deport them, because you can't deport an American citizen out of the United States of America.
That's correct. Yeah. Yep. The bill provides statutory authority for the requirement that the Department of Education, as another communist organization, the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights take into consideration the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's working definition of anti-Semitism when reviewing or investigating complaints about discrimination, etc., etc. So this is all, this may be one of the biggest blows to this country ever if this bill gets signed. And Trump will sign it. I see no reason why he wouldn't. He wouldn't dare go against his controllers. He's a pro-war Zionist president. Go ahead.
It's interesting you mentioned communism, communism in that context, because I personally knew the late Josep Tereria, who had been in the Gulag prisons for 23 years. He was 46 years old when he made it to Canada, so he had spent half of his life in the Gulag. And I had even asked him one time, I said, why is it that when you're speaking Ukrainian, I can understand you, but I can't understand the other Ukrainians? And he says, because my Ukrainian has been so Russianized with all the years I spent in the gulag, is that's why you can understand me, because you understand Russian. So this is, he was 23 years in the Soviet gulag.
Wow.
And he ended up in the West, first in Austria, and then he came to Canada, because here he was, born in the Soviet Union. But he had just arbitrarily, his Soviet citizenship was terminated. He was stripped of his Soviet citizenship, and he was just told, you're not a citizen of this country anymore, and they kicked him out.
Wow. Well, I wonder if he knew Solzhenitsyn. He might have. Might very well have. Probably did. The Senate may vote on the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act before the end of the year. We're talking 2.5 weeks, less. We must act now. There's a big organization out trying to stop this. The Anti-Semitism Awareness Act threatens free expression on campus by pressuring schools to police all speech under a vague and overbroad definition of anti-Semitism. It goes on from there. So if you're interested, you can move online to help. The organization is called FIRE, FIRE, Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. They're fighting this anti-Semitism bill. They're in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. FIRE. FIRE.org. FIRE.org.
And people need to understand that anti-Semitism, in fact, is definable as anything that the Israel lobby doesn't like. Anything the Israel lobby doesn't like is anti-Semitism.
That is a very appropriate definition. Let me see if I can find this woman who made that statement about deporting anybody who speaks against Israel. Semitism. See if I can find it. Probably not. No, I don't think so. No. They're just talking about the actual definition of anti-Semitism. But you just defined it perfectly. It's exactly correct. It's anything they don't want to hear. Makes them uncomfortable. These people have got to be somehow understood for what they are by the masses. And there are more people waking up here all the time. But they need to be understood. And the incredible amount of power they have and control is really too much. What is it, 17 million people who identify as being Jewish on the whole planet? 17 million? That's 0.02% of the world population or something like that. It's an infinitesimally small number of people, and yet they have taken control of virtually everything. You've seen it over there all your life.
Well, they've taken control of the money system.
That's the root of all evil. They're evil. So that's what they would take control of. And most everybody seems to have a price. That always amazes me. Well, we'll give you $100,000 if you vote this way. This is a private conversation, of course. He says, no, no, not a chance. They may go up to $1 million to buy that vote. They have as much money as they want. People donate millions and millions and millions to these organizations every year. They're suckers. Anyway. All right, we have about 5 minutes left, my friend. What would you like to finish tonight's conversation with? Anything in particular? We have Christmas coming up. What is Christmas in 2024? Will this be the last Christmas? Some people are talking like that. How about Christmas?
I hope we have at least one Christmas left, because it is quite possible that with this this I forgot the name, this this Russian general, head of the military intelligence in Moscow.
He was head of the nuclear, biological, and chemical defenses for the greater Moscow region. That was his direct charge. Go ahead.
And the Zelensky regime is actually taking credit for having killed the man.
Yes, they are. That's correct. How much more can Vladimir Putin absorb without having his own people turned against him? They're not doing anything of any substance to stop this lunacy in Ukraine. They should have crushed Ukraine in 90 days. It's been going on for well over 1,000 days. I am not a military veteran or a tactician, but watching it from my perspective, they're letting this thing go on and on and on. And malls are still open in Kiev and Odessa and Kharkov. Power's on. Even though they keep bombing the power plants, they, the Russians. So I don't know. You either fight a war to win or you don't fight it at all. So how much more can they tolerate? I don't know. Well, yeah, this general was blown up with his assistant, attaché, I guess. They walked out of a building and they had parked a motor scooter right in front of the building that was full of explosives. And someone was across the street or down the block watching, and they just threw a switch. Boom. And the general was dead. And his assistant was too.
This cannot go on much longer. And we still have the American people brainwashed to believe that the United States is on the side of the Ukrainian people, and this is such a this is such a cruel joke, because the if the United States government really stood with Ukraine and the interest, the common good and interest of the Ukrainian people, they would never have overthrown the Ukrainian government and replaced it with a puppet regime whose purpose is to wage war against Russia. This is all about making war against Russia. And now the Biden government is authorizing the sending of nuclear weapons into Ukraine, that will target Russia. It's very clear now that they had no interest whatever in the well-being and the good of the Ukrainian nation, the Ukrainian people. That, as far as they're concerned, Ukraine could be completely wiped off the face of the earth, and they couldn't care less. They want to fight. They want to target Russia. They want to fight against Russia.
Well, they have verbally stated as much dozens of times. They want to kill as many Russians as possible. Not military. They're not restricting it at all. Russians, civilians. Today, they hit a college or a university, I forget which. It was a college, at least, in the Kursk area, and a school, and killed at least six people. These are the Ukrainians, and they're bragging about it, in addition to bragging about killing that general in Moscow. These are humiliations to Putin, and I don't understand how he is, he really is in trouble. I can't think that the people are happy with this kind of leadership. He's not doing anything to make a massive statement and ending this war. It just keeps going on and on.
Well, his patience is wearing thin, I'm sure, and there's going to be a response like the world cannot imagine.
I hope so. Somebody's counting, and he's counted. He said over 30 red lines have been crossed by the West that Putin has laid down. 30. And he still hasn't pulled the trigger on the big one. Not necessarily a nuclear war, but on the big effort, the big operation to crush the Zionist regime in Ukraine. How is Zelensky still alive unless somebody ordered that he not be killed? That's my take.
Well, saner minds in American military intelligence have conducted evaluations of of the military force of the United States and the NATO allies against Russia and China. And they're all unanimous in that the United States cannot win a war against Russia and China.
No, of course not. The United States military ammunition and general munitions inventory has been drained to such low standing now that many top military people are saying we wouldn't last 2 weeks in a war against China. They're saying that. And it's true. We've been largely disarmed by the Ukrainian war on Russia. Well, I shouldn't say that because it's part of the U.S., it's NATO, it's the U.K., and the Ukrainian regime, which is not representative of the Ukrainian people at all. So that's who's really running the show. Thank you, Father Kramer, for being here and sharing your views. They're always respected and appreciated. And Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Okay. Good night. Talk to you next year.
All right. Next year.
Okay. All right. That's it for Friday. Thank you for being here this week. It's been a long one. I'm going to rest up this weekend. We'll see what happens. Take care. Beware. And prepare, please. Talk soon.